This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. When you look in the mirror, do you like what you see? Part of the answer may have to do with what you are literally seeing, your skin. We asked you to tell us how you care for your skin. Here's what one listener left in our inbox.
Hi, this is Keith at 8,000 feet in Colorado. And being fair complected, I started taking better care of my skin about 30 years ago. I was already about 30 at that time, and I used department store brands for a few years, but then increasingly dermatologists said you didn't need to use those, so I'm kind of budget conscious, so I use drugstore and mass marketer brands now, and they seem to work quite well. I also, since I'm in Colorado, can get away with wearing a cowboy hat most of the time, and that helps keep the sun off my skin. I'm in the outdoors a lot, and I think that's very helpful to preventing skin cancers and so on.
Keith, thanks very much for sharing your story with us. Sorry we missed you. We were just in Colorado, but thank you for sharing your story with us. And it turns out there are a lot of people like Keith with skin in this game, especially if they work in the cosmetics industry. Last year, sales of skincare products doubled. And nearly half the beauty industry's recent growth came from products like cleansers and creams and serums and sheet masks. But it can be hard to know what works, what's legit, and whether all the effort is worth it. What does it mean that so many of us pay top dollar to put our best face forward? And what should you be using to take care of your skin? Joining us here in studio is Dr. Cheryl Burgess. She's the founder and president of the Center for Dermatology and Dermatologic Surgery here in Washington. Dr. Burgess, welcome to 1A.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Joining us from NPR in New York is Amanda Mull, a staff writer for The Atlantic who's been covering the skincare industry. Amanda, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And also at NPR New York are Charlotte and Dave Cho, the co-founders of Soko Glam, an online vendor for Korean skincare products. Charlotte, Dave, glad to have you both with us.
Thank you for having us.
Happy to be here.
Dr. Burgess, let me start with you. Before we start getting into skincare, can you just give us a basic roadmap of our skin, how it's composed, what it's made of? Can you just paint us a picture of exactly what we're talking about here?
Yes, I can. And to simplify it, everyone has skin. It's the largest organ of our body. So we need to protect that, just like we do our heart and our lungs, etc. And so the skin is comprised of the epidermis, the dermis, and the subcutaneous tissues. And then below that, we have muscle and our organ system. So the skin is the largest organ, and we separate it into different types of skin that are related to how easily you burn or how easily you sunburn. So it's called the Fitzpatrick skincare typing, and we have type 1 through 6. So 1 is going to sunburn very easily, whereas 6 is going to probably tan much quicker or brown. The skin will brown much quicker than, say, a type 1.
Is that just related to skin color, or are there more factors behind that?
Well, they try to associate it with skin color, but technically, it's your minimum erythema dose. And what that is how soon will you burn when you get in the sun? So when we look at sunscreens, for example, that's what we're looking at. So I may recommend a SPF of 15 for a darker skin person versus someone who seems to be fair like the caller. They may need more protection because they sunburn easily. And of course, we know sunburns lead to skin cancers.
Sunscreen is definitely going to come up as this hour progresses. We got lots of comments on sunscreen. But Amanda Mull, I wonder just this conversation on skincare, why you think it's happening now? Why is skincare kind of having a moment right now?
Well, I think that there are a couple things. First, I think that the burgeoning market right now is a reaction in part to millennials getting older. The oldest millennials are reaching into their mid to late 30s, which is where you start to see visible signs of aging, crow's feet, and things like that.
Charlotte or Dave Cho, I'd love either of your perspectives on this moment that skincare seems to be having. From your perspectives as someone who kind of works in the business, how do you see this particular moment?
I think that it is an important moment of self-care. I think that people are seeing that skincare is something that is truly a delight, a moment to relax, unwind at the end of the end of the day. I see a lot of Korean women had taken that approach. They had a very skin-first philosophy to skincare. They wanted to really understand their skin type, their skin concerns, and work towards those goals through education. And because they were so savvy, they were able to put together a routine that really helped them achieve their goals. And in the process, they had fun with it. And I think that through social media, you've been able to share a little bit about your skincare journey and share with your friends and your community exactly what you're up to, what products you're trying and discovering, and the results you're seeing. So it's become just a part of your lifestyle.
Dave, anything you would add to this kind of moment for skincare?
Yeah, just one quick thing I would add is that I think that the consumers have a lot more power today than ever before. And especially in skincare, you know, back in the day, I think that it was really more of a reactionary thing, you know, whether it was prevention on wrinkles, anti-aging creams. And therefore, I think one of the byproducts of that is that skincare was kind of intimidating, to be honest, I think. But now that consumers are becoming more skincare savvy, caring a lot more about what's actually happening underneath their makeup, I think they're trying to address those problems head on. And, you know, everything kind of snowballs and that flywheel starts spinning. And that's why you're seeing that, you know, I think the first time in a very long time, prestige skincare has kind of outpaced makeup growth over the past couple of years.
By the way, just as a disclaimer, we are indeed speaking to a dermatologist, but please do not substitute anything you hear today for getting your own consultation from your own doctor. Nothing you hear today substitutes getting a personalized recommendation from your own dermatologist. Amanda, there's this term that keeps coming up, which is good skin. What do we mean when we say that somebody has good skin?
Generally, what we mean by good skin is smooth and even-toned skin. So skin that doesn't vary a lot in color, that doesn't have redness, that doesn't have noticeable blemishes. You're looking for the most even sort of canvas possible.
Dr. Burgess, I'd love your perspective on what good skin means to you as a dermatologist.
Well, as a dermatologist, we don't usually refer to that term. We refer to healthy skin. And what that implies is that you have great hydration. You protect your skin with sun protective agents or shielding hats and things like that. And of course, it's discoloration and redness that we see. But we have to remember that a lot of our photo damage comes from early years when we were probably children out running around all summer long.
Photo damage? Light sunlight damage?
Sunlight damage, exactly. Because if you think about the facial skin, it's always exposed from the day you're born into the day you die. That's not generally an area that's covered. And so it gets the exposure. If you look at your facial skin and say, look at an area of the body that's non-exposed, you'll see quite a difference in the shades of color of your skin.
Dave, what comes to mind for you when someone refers to good skin?
So many thoughts, actually. But to me, it's all about something that we think a lot about is that, you know, beauty and skincare is a journey, not a destination. I think that, you know, in our experience that we find that there's the aspirational kind of skin that you're looking for. And a lot of people define that a little bit differently. I think I agree with everything that's been discussed so far. But it's also about like taking preventive measures. Something we think a lot about is sun protection. That's so important. A lot of people still, there's a need to demystify sunscreen and why it's so important. It's not just about skin cancer, which is totally, totally important in terms mm-hmm. of health. But it's about, like, you know, people understand it also helps with reducing wrinkles and such.
We'll continue our conversation momentarily with Charlotte and Dave Cho of Soko Glam, Amanda Mull of The Atlantic, and Dr. Cheryl Burgess. And we'll get some more of your questions and comments as well. I'm Joshua Johnson. Glad to be with you. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from LegalZoom. Business owners can count on LegalZoom for legal advice and no surprises. Over 2 million business owners have trusted LegalZoom for LLCs, S-Corps, and DBAs. They've built a network of independent attorneys available in all 50 states, and LegalZoom provides complete transparency with upfront pricing and customer reviews to bring you peace of mind. More information is available at LegalZoom.com/NPR.
Human behavior doesn't always make a ton of sense, at least on the surface.
I said, would you mind if I give the dogs a little piece of cracker with some hot sauce on it and without and see what they choose?
Hidden Brain, a spicy podcast about science, psychology, and why people do what they do.
This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. We're getting deep under the surface of the skincare industry. Charlotte and Dave Cho, let me camp out with you for a bit because we wanted to talk to you specifically about skincare in South Korea and its influence on the U.S. Charlotte, can you give me one of the big differences between how South Korean culture views skincare and how most of U.S. culture views skincare?
Sure. When I was living in Korea for about 5 years, I immediately was amazed at how savvy Korean women and men were about their skin, and they had really extensive skincare routines. I was born and raised in California, so I didn't really have much of that skincare culture growing up, and they just had a very multi-step skincare routine that really targeted cleansing, moisturizing, sunscreen protection, and in between, tons of treatment steps that would really help them achieve their skin goals. So that savviness was something that I learned while I was in Korea and I wanted to bring to the U.S. because I felt like there was such a big difference in terms of education. And so in my journey of learning about skincare from Korea, I realized that there was just not that much education in the U.S. And it's actually a complicated subject because it is the largest organ on your body, and a lot of people have different skin concerns depending on their age, depending on their climate, depending on, you know, their goals. So there are so many customized routes you can go, and I realized that in order to hit the results that you want, you truly have to invest time in educating yourself. And so that's exactly what, you know, I intended to do with SokoGlam.
Charlotte, on your website, you describe a 10-step Korean skincare routine. I think for a person like me who is used to just like soap and lotion, 10 steps sounds like a lot to go through. But what are the 10 steps of this routine?
Sure. So just as a little disclaimer before we scare everyone away, 10 steps is not really about using 10 products every morning and night. It's actually a word that I coined, the Korean 10-step skincare routine I coined back in 2013 when we first started SokoGlam. And that was not because we were telling you you have to use 10 steps every morning and night. It was because we simply wanted to educate people on the possible steps there are out there. So starting with an oil cleanser really helps break down any oil-based impurities like makeup and sunscreen. There's also pollution, which is largely oil-based. And then second step is a water-based cleanser. It really helps wick away any remaining impurities that you may have on your skin. And the third step is a exfoliator. So that's going to help slough off any dead skin cells that will really help brighten your complexion. We also have an essence. An essence really helps bring back moisture to your skin, and it really helps brighten your skin depending on the ingredients that are in there. There's a toner that will also help balance your pH levels. It also helps hydrate your skin as well. And there's also a series of steps in between, like a sheet mask, which can be substituted for the essence step, which will help brighten your skin. And there's also serums and eye creams. Eye creams are pretty self-explanatory. Serums are highly concentrated ingredients that will help either lighten brown spots or they'll help smooth out your skin texture. And you're going to have to lock it in with a moisturizer to keep the hydration in. So a moisturizer is one of the 10 steps. And lastly, before you go outside and get sun exposure, there's sunscreen. So that's going to help protect your skin from any UV and UVB rays or UVA rays.
Dave, this is a lot of work.
What
kind of reaction have you guys been getting to this very intense regimen? In the U.S., I mean, in Western cultures.
the fact of the matter is these products have been in the U.S. market for decades before we even started SilkoGlam. But the difference was what Charlotte mentioned is the education. You know, it was really a tool. In a large part of the way, K-Beauty was like an education tool for the larger skincare market. And, you know, there's the big beauty global brands. One of the CEOs was actually asked about early on the K-Beauty journey about, like, what they're going to do about, you know, K-Beauty. And, you know, he is quoted for saying that, you know, the way we're going to address it, we're going to embrace it.
Dr. Burgess, I'd love to get your take on some of these multi-step regimens because we got a lot of comments about them, including from Monica. Monica emailed, many skincare product lines seem to insist on multi-step regimens using as many as 7 products, or in this case 10. Wanting to care for my skin but keeping it simple and affordable, what are the most important products and steps I need to use? Doctor?
Well, there's a science behind why we recommend what we recommend. The body goes through a circadian rhythm, just like anything else in nature. And there are products that actually are designed to protect you, and then there are products that are there to help recover or improve the skin. So we kind of separate the products to be simple about it. You want to use your protective preparations in the morning and your repair preparations at night. And when we talk about protection, we talk about obviously sun protection. We talk about your antioxidants. There are radicals that form when the sun hits the skin. And so you want your antioxidants to capture the oxidation process that's going on. And therefore, there's a science behind why we do what we do. And unfortunately, there are a lot of companies out there, particularly when I'm talking about prestige retail, and that the counter people really aren't educated in really about skin. They're just there to sell a regimen to you. And so I can understand the caller's concern that we just have all of these steps and they really don't know how to use it. So, but repair, we have things that repair, like our acid-containing preparations, your glycolic acid, lactic acid, salicylic acid. Your retinols are also a repair mode types of preparations. So when I recommend cosmeceuticals or things even over-the-counter for patients, there's a rhyme and a reason to why I'm going to recommend something.
So preparation in the morning and then kind of repair in the evening?
Protection in the morning and repair in the evening, yeah. And that's what the body is doing. So you're using products that are assisting the body to do what it needs to do.
Certainly some skepticism about these regimens as well. One listener emailed, skincare? Not necessary in our family. We're Greek. Mom passed at 88, no wrinkles. Dad passed at 103. His doctor said he looked 30 years younger than his age. I'm 74, few wrinkles, years of sunning in Florida with no sunscreen, look years younger than my age. All we do is use Dove soap. Multi-step skincare? Good way for cosmetic companies and cosmetologists to make money. Charlotte, what would you say to that listener?
That's really interesting to hear that because the past 7 years of SilkoGlam and sharing this multi-step routine and really educating people on why you use certain steps really has created this amazing community where I've also been talking to our customers and they've been writing us 2-page-long testimonials about how their skin has changed. I'm also an esthetician, so I've worked closely learning the biology of the skin and with people and giving facials. And I've also provided them insight into why you would double cleanse or why you would use certain preparations or ingredients to help improve their skin. And they've come back to me and explained to me that their skin has never looked better. I personally have been on that journey myself, and I've seen what education can do to the health of your skin. I agree that 70% of your skin will be from genetics, but there's 30% of your lifestyle, your environment, and all the things that associate with just life that will really impact your skin. And so it's really about getting ahead of that. It's about making sure you're protected from the sun rays and all of these steps that will help you get to a very healthy and hydrated state for your skin.
Dave, I'd love you to respond to Charles, who tweeted, "I look forward to learning about skincare since you're devoting time to it, but I don't see any scenario in this world in which I have fun with it." And he ended that with kind of that crying, laughing emoji. Dave, for people who just don't see how this could be fun, what would you say to them?
You know, I don't think it has to be fun sometimes. You know, I think that, you know, some people will delight in it. For the large part, when we first got started, skincare kind of seemed to be a chore. I think that's a lot of, like, you know, when you're having a great Friday night, maybe with the last thing on your mind when you get home, maybe around midnight, is to wash your face. But as people got more educated, it has really changed people's lifestyles. I would say specifically to this comment is what I speak a lot about from a, you know, when I talk to other men, is I look at it as an investment. You know, that word seems to maybe kind of resonate more for some than it has to be fun. Because for me, I think that you can think about it as like a good pair of leather shoes, right? And I've written about this on a blog back in the day. And it's kind of like what happens when you don't moisturize that shoe or take care of that shoe. It starts to break down. That leather starts to break down. And, you know, you'll start getting cracks in it. And that shoe is not going to be wearable anymore. And the idea is, like, is your shoe more important than your face?
Speaking of men's products, Nicholas tweeted, "I see a good deal of skincare products advertised toward women. Are there any significant differences between male and female biology that necessitates differences in how I as a male care for my skin?" We'll answer that in a moment. Stay close.
There's a subculture of people fascinated by prime numbers, you know, like 7, 11, 13, 17, 19.
Primes go on forever. There is no final biggest prime number.
And the hunt for the latest monster prime number can take years.
You end up with a 24 million digit long number.
Ideas on the power and beauty of math on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Back now to our conversation with Dr. Cheryl Burgess, Amanda Mull, and Charlotte and Dave Cho. Still time to get in some more of your questions and thoughts, including from Nicholas, who tweeted, "I see a good deal of skincare products advertised towards women. Are there any significant differences between male and female biology that necessitates differences in how I, as a male, care for my skin?" Definitely men and skincare has become an increasingly interesting topic. Some of you are fans of Queer Eye on Netflix. This is a clip where one of the stars, Jonathan Van Ness, helps a group of firefighters with self-care.
Face masks can be like a little expensive moment, so you can actually make a lot of them on your own at home. The one that we're doing today is an egg white and peach face mask, and you're gonna blend that sucker into a gorgeous pudding consistency. Okay. The enzymes in the peach clarify the skin, and they also encourage your skin to detoxify, which I was thinking for you guys since you're around smoky wokiness all the time, that would be kind of nice.
It's Jonathan Van Ness trying to help those firefighters with all that nasty smoky wokiness from Queer Eye on Netflix. Dr. Burgess, what about men versus women and skincare?
Well, there's one major difference is that men have facial hair. So we have to think about that. But as far as the thickness of skin, you do have a thicker skin in men than you do women. And sometimes there are other issues that, like I was saying, with the hair that may be an issue in grooming. But I look at it this way. I tell men, I remember when Rogaine came out, which they used for hair loss. And the men were like, "Do I need to use it every day?" And I'm like, you brush your teeth every day. There's certain hygiene things that we do every day. So just get used to it. Women don't think twice about going to the hairdresser or doing things for their hair. So men have, I think, since a grooming product has come around, like I know years ago, Brute, they started using colognes and fragrances. And then I think it's a gradual way of men and how they're kind of entering into the skincare or fragrance market or what have you. And I think it's more open now that men do that and they take care of their skin. I think the number one thing that I have been able to get across to a lot of my patients was the sunscreen. And I say you have to cleanse your skin just like you brush your teeth. So cleanse your skin and put the moisturizer containing the sunscreen on. And they make it, you know, doable because they now mix the two.
We got lots and lots of comments about sunscreen. Lots of listeners told us about their sunscreen use. Here's some of what you left in our inbox.
This is Liza from Waconia, Minnesota.
This is Joe from Gainesville, Florida.
My name is Nancy. I currently live in San Francisco, but I grew up in New Jersey. Going to the Jersey Shore as a teenager, when we used to put on suntan lotion, I'm now in my 70s and my skin is thinning. So what would be considered a normal scrape takes me to the urgent care unit because my skin peels back and it has to be treated like a burn.
I'm a long-term construction worker, 40 years, been in the sun my entire life, never used anything. I understand the problem of melanoma, et cetera, but my wife grew up in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. She went to the beach all the time, constantly used sunscreens and what I call them grease. And her skin is extremely supple, very nice. And she constantly greases everything, her feet, her hands, her back, everything.
In my young 20s, I never gave skincare a thought and took my skin for granted. Now that I'm in my mid-40s, I noticed I had early signs of rosacea, which bothered me. Got my husband on board with allowing me to head to the dermatologist where they recommended a series of laser treatments. Pulled the plug, spent the money, received 3 laser treatments, and the signs went away. And they told me that this rosacea was from sun damage, and I realized that as I look back in all these years, I never wore sunscreen on my face.
Dr. Burgess, I wonder what you would want people to keep in mind when they think about sunscreen. I, you know, being African American, I didn't think much about sunscreen unless I was like at an outdoor event. I learned that I tend to itch, not really burn, but really have the effects of the sun on the backs of my hands if I don't put sunscreen on my hands. And it caught me totally off. I was like, what? What? I thought I knew my body. It just kind of stunned me.
It's very common. We call it polymorphous light eruptions. There are some people who become allergic to the sun. So one of our key treatments is sun protection. But I try to educate people on how to determine sunscreens. When you look at UVA and UVB rays, you look at, say, for instance, UVB for burns, UVA for aging. And so when we look at sunscreens, it's primarily for the burning. So when you go out in the sun, you're not burning. But the higher the SPF over 30, the more it crosses over into the UVA ranges. And I don't think there's anybody on the planet who doesn't want to age. And so the protective rays of UVA and UVB is beneficial for everyone, regardless if you're out in the sun and, sun burning. For the most part, there are some studies that also show that if you do have discoloration of your skin or you have sun damage that has been present, that sunscreen does help to blend the complexion. So
should everybody just go for like SPF 100, like for maximum protection?
No, the American Academy of Dermatology recommends an SPF of 30, and that's going to be average for individuals. But definitely you can go higher. And again, the higher you go, the more it crosses over into the UVA rays. And so it helps you with the aging aspect, like the photo damage, the discoloration, and all the other things that occur just being in sun and not necessarily sunburn. So I think that crosses all ethnicities as far as keeping your complexion even.
We got so many good questions. Thank you all for the variety and the array of questions that you shared. Amanda Moll, one of them had to do with how people know what works and what doesn't, because things like skincare products, makeup products can be investigated by the FDA, but they don't need that kind of prior approval. Linda from Virginia shared a note about that in our inbox.
I have a little skin studio, and I'm actually on my way there right now, and hearing this seems very poignant. Skin is the largest organ of the body, and it is, to me, the most important organ. We need to feel good in our own skin, literally. And the industry is saturated with a lot of misinformation, a lot of advertising, so it's a challenge to navigate through those waters. People are just looking for some high-quality, real guidance.
Yeah, Linda, thanks very much for sharing your thoughts with us. Let me see if we can get to a few more quick questions before our time is up. One listener emailed, I'm wondering whether there are any new procedures that can remove scars, in particular for people that may have self-harmed while they were teenagers. Doctor, is there anything that can be done about removing scarring?
Well, we use the term scar revision because a scar is going to remain a scar once it's once you have an injury to your body. So there are ways that we can improve. Yes, I have a patient who has self-inflicted scars on her wrists, and we have had to try to improve or revise those scars in order so she can be out socially and not be self-conscious about the scars. So yeah, there are things. We have to look at the person individually, determine what's suitable for that type of skin that they have. We would do something different in, say, someone of color versus someone of Caucasian. And yes, we do treat scars. Now, not all dermatologists treat scars, so it's important for you to do your research to see who does scar revision, but that's what it's called.
Something about that term is also interesting, and like changing the meaning of that scar, which
yes.
is what it means to revise
yes.
something.
And I've had women after abusive relationships and things who don't want to be reminded of that scar. So we can treat a lot of different things.
I did want to get to one more email, and Charlotte, I'd love you to respond to Constance because she brings up something that a lot of people bring up, and they say it is their silver bullet. Constance emailed, my skincare secret, cocoa butter. You really don't need much more than that. P.S. I'm white. For people, Charlotte, who say, I got cocoa butter, it's good enough for Tina Turner and Michelle Obama, and it's good enough for me. Why do I need 10 steps? What would you say to them?
Yeah, I mean, whatever works for you, that's completely fine. It's your skincare journey, and it's really dependent on what your skin goals are. I'm curious to know if she has any other skin concerns that she may have that maybe a vitamin C serum could help with. You know, using a vitamin C treatment could really help brighten the skin tone. If that's not her goal, though, then she doesn't need to worry about it. Again, it's not really about using 10 products every morning and night. It's really just educating yourself on what steps and ingredients there are that can help you achieve your skin goals. For me, I personally have hormonal acne, and that's something that happened to me when I was 30. And so I never had that concern before. And then after I experienced it, I've learned that salicylic acid and other chemical exfoliants really help, you know, calm that breakout down. And mm-hmm. I also have pimple patches that actually help flatten that out, that sucker, right away, right as soon as I experience a breakout. So it really is dependent on what your goals are. So skincare should be fun, and it should be, you know, something that is not taken so seriously. If you don't want to invest in it, that's completely fine and up to you.
And Dr. Burgess, before we go, what about cocoa butter?
Right. Well, you know, I look at it this way. My great-grandmother had perfect skin. I did not inherit her skin. She used cocoa butter, Noxzema, all these other things. And when she tried to teach us skincare on there, you know, using these products, it didn't work for me. And I say that to my patients. If that works for you, that's fine. It's not necessary that you have to have a lot of steps to have clear skin. I think it's fine.
Dr. Cheryl Burgess, the founder and president of the Center for Dermatology and Dermatologic Surgery here in Washington. Dr. Burgess, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you.
Charlotte and David Cho, the co-founders of SocoGlam. Charlotte, David, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Amanda Mull, staff writer for The Atlantic. Thanks, Amanda.
Thanks for having me.
Today's conversation was produced by Jonquilin Hill and edited by Miranda Fulmore. You can learn more about them and the rest of our team online at the1a.org/staff. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for listening. This is 1A.
You never can win. Why not you? Your mentality. Step up, wake up to reality. But each time I do, just the thought of you makes me stop just before I begin. 'Cause I've got you under my skin.